You're listening to Behind the Viewfinder podcast, where you can relate as client or as service-based entrepreneur. Listen in on behind the scenes of client projects, the latest image capturing trends, and recommendations for your photo or video needs. Here's your host, Andy Coles.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Behind the Viewfinder podcast. If this is your first time tuning in, thanks for dropping by. This is where we talk about photo and video capturing things related. We also discuss topics about what a client might be curious about or interested in when it comes to image capturing services. So grab some oysters and get comfy because we're getting this podcast started. It's National Oyster Day. I have never enjoyed oysters because when I first had it, it was like toppled with hot sauce, lemon juice. And to me, you're just masking it. Anyhow, today I have a special guest, and Veronica, please introduce yourself and what your hashtag and get your take on oysters.
Awesome. My name is Veronica Reinert. I'm the owner of Motionscape Photography. I think I've had oysters before, but I honestly don't really remember. But I do like seafood a ton. So I'd probably love them, and I probably did love them. And that's probably why there's no negative memories coming to mind about them.
No negative condensation to that.
Yeah.
It was weird because the first time that I had them, Heidi and I met with some business partners that were basically kind of onboarding me for some studio stuff. And they treated us to this fusion, like Asian restaurant. And he was like, hey, let's have some oysters. You guys ever check oysters? Like, no, but I mean, if you're willing to, you know, float the tab, then I'll give it a shot, you know? And I was kind of thinking that it was going to be kind of like a escargot type of like middle ground savory / chewy. It was like a big mucus ball.
Oh, like gosh.
Just covered and doused with hot sauce and lemon juice.
Okay, maybe I haven't had them, because if I did, I would not have. maybe I did have them and I didn't think about a mucus ball. I don't know. But I'll err on the side of I've never had them. I would have liked to try them, but now that I'm, you know, thinking of a mucus ball on the inside, maybe I'll pass.
Are you big on texture?
Yes, huge. Yeah.
Like certain things for me, texture wise, like if it's on that very slimy spectrum of things, it's kind of questionable. But that was definitely it. It took me for a spin a little bit, for sure.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I don't eat fruit for that very reason.
I'm really?
Such any, a weirdo. No fruit. I'll drink smoothies all day, but the texture of just cold, squishy fruit, hate it. Hate it so much. Soggy cereal, same thing. But I love things like mushrooms or like calamari, rubbery things I think are delicious. But yeah, just cold, squishy anything I'm not on board with.
And what about an apple? Because like certain apples are very like, I don't want to say gritty almost in a sense.
I've come across one or two good crunchy apples in my lifetime, but ultimately kind of steer clear.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. So you guys, if there's anything that you guys can relate on to oysters or anything like that, let me know. DM me, email me. You know it's the drill. I want your take on oysters. So moving forward with this podcast, tell us about what you'd like to rock during a typical shoot for yourself.
So right now I have the Canon 6D, which is a full frame camera, and it's marketed as the semi-professional full frame camera. So it's a step down from like the 5D Mark, whatever series. I love it. I tend to think it doesn't have a huge difference between it and the level above it, the 5D Mark series. So I have that. I've been using that body for 6 years, and it served me faithfully. I haven't had any issues with it. And then in terms of my lenses, my camera bag I usually bring the same four lenses with me everywhere. And I tend to use zoom lenses. I know how you feel about that. so I have they're all Canon. I've got the 16 to 35, the 24 to 70 and the 70 to 200, all f2.8. And then when I shoot skate photography, I have a little 15 millimeter fisheye that I'll use as well.
Nice. And we say skateboard.
Skateboarding,
right?
Correct.
Okay, cool. Because you just had like a gig this weekend, right?
Yeah, I shot an ice skating, like a figure skating competition for the last 4 days. I actually just came from the ice rink straight to this little interview.
That's rad. And here we are freezing you out with air conditioning more. You're like, no. I'm gonna thaw out.
No, it's great. It feels great.
Okay. Cool stuff. So one thing that I want to really ask you about is to hear your story about how you've gotten to where you are now. I mean, your photos are prevalent in just a lot of like Pilates stuff in that realm and that aspect. But your story that where you began doesn't align in some sense. So it's very interesting to me and very inspiring. So if you could you tell your story from, I mean, even when you said about even just getting your camera, it was just like so interesting. So take it away.
Sure. So when I started getting into photography, I was in my early 20s. I had never taken a photography class ever in my life, even though I had lots of friends that took photography class in high school and in college. And it just didn't seem like my realm. And I never thought that I would ever become a photographer. At the time I was teaching Pilates and starting to get into the dance world. I ended up being a dance major at UC Berkeley and got my degree in that. And while I was there, I linked up with this photographer named Anna Vickra, and she owned a studio called Ultraspective Photography in Livermore, California. And she did my headshots. She shot some photos of me in the Pilates studio. And I just loved her gallery space. And we ended up working it out to where I would do private sessions, like Pilates sessions and Zumba sessions with her staff at her studio in exchange for store credit. Yes. So I got to go to her gallery quite frequently. And just the images she had on the wall were so inspiring and compelling and different from any other type of photos I've ever seen. And she did portrait work, but it was just so unique and so beautiful. And it kind of stirred something in me to where I was like, you know, maybe I want to be a photographer, but like, I don't really want to do weddings and I don't care about shooting kids or dogs or families or anything like that. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized, you know, I was getting into dance. I subscribed to Dance Magazine and I noticed that I had cut out all these photos of dancers from these magazines and plastered them all over my walls. And I realized I only got the magazines for the photos. And I just had this idea one day that I wanted to be a dance photographer. Like just that idea seemed so sexy and so fun and different and awesome to me. But I had no idea about photography whatsoever. I didn't know what different camera bodies there were. I didn't know what specs for lenses you needed to get. I didn't know what you needed to shoot dance, or even how to get started. But in my mind, I was like, well, if I only shoot dance, then I don't need to know about shooting all these other genres. I don't need to know the technical aspects. I don't need to take a class. I just figure out how to be really good at this one thing, and I'll just do that, and that'll be my thing. So I was talking to Anna, the owner of the photography studio, and kind of mentioned this to her, and she was so kind and, you know, humored me and was like on board with it. And I remember going on the internet and being like, okay, what is the best kind of camera for dance photography? Like, what's the best dance photography camera? And I look up some article that was giving tips on, you know, how to shoot dance. And there was a photo in it that was, you know, in the caption said, this photo was taken with a Canon 20D. And I was like, that's the camera I need. Mm-hmm. This was also 2009. And the Canon 20D came out in 2004 and was one of like the first entry level DSLRs to hit the market. So it was, it's at this point in 2021, it is archaic compared to what we have now. So I went back to Anna and I said, Anna, I need to find a Canon 20D. And she said, well, you're in luck. I happen to have a used one that I was about to sell on Craigslist that I'll sell to you for like $200 if you want it. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. But it didn't come with a lens or anything. But how fortuitous that she happened to have right. the exact camera body I was looking for. So she sold it to me, $200, done. And then it sat in my closet for years because I didn't know what kind of lens to get. I didn't have the money or the time to really figure it out. And I ended up moving, after I graduated college, I moved across the country to Massachusetts and started dancing with like a local modern not-for-profit dance company. And since they were not-for-profit, they didn't have a big budget for a photographer to do press photos for their spring concert. And so I raised my hand and said, well, I happen to have a dance photography camera. I could do the photos. And they're like, okay, well, let's give it a shot. So I had a week to figure out what lens I needed, how to use my camera, and how to shoot anything. I hadn't shot anything with this camera yet, by the way. I almost sold it a number of times to pay my rent. And so that assignment kind of pushed me to figure out, okay, like let's start using this thing. So I walk into Best Buy.
Hey.
And I go to the photography department and I ask the, you know, the guy working the area, I said, you know, please show me your best dance photography lens, thinking that that's how it worked. And he of course had no idea. He just worked there. He doesn't know. And so he sold me some kit lens, something that felt really heavy and exciting, but ended up not being at all what I needed. And thankfully, I discovered that the same day. So I returned the lens. I was really upset and frustrated that I didn't get what I needed. No one there could help me. But luckily, across the street, there was a, I think like a Sammy's camera or a something similar. And I walk in and tell the cashier my sob story about how I needed this dance photography lens. Best Buy doesn't know what they're doing. Please help me. And the cashier there was, again, so very kind and showed me like, okay, here's what it means if something is 50 millimeters versus 85 millimeters versus 15 millimeters. And like had me look through a camera body through these different lenses to see like his proximity to me and like was teaching me on the fly about nice. Distances and just kind of coached me through and ended up selling me a used, it was a 28 millimeter 1.8. And it's that honestly is not an ideal dance photography lens, but for what I needed at the time, the 1.8 is what sold me, and he sold it to me for the same price as what that first lens
score.
Yeah, so he gave me a bit of a deal on it. So my whole entire initial setup was like $500 altogether, $200 for the body, $300 for the lens. And then I just grabbed some friends who were not dancers and took them to the spot we were going to shoot at and just said, hey, just jump around and move around so I can like test out, you know, these settings. And in the meantime, I had picked up Digital Photography for Dummies,
okay.
which is a fantastic book, by the way, and read the chapters about exposure and, you know, how to shoot manually. Because I figured if professional photographers shoot manually, then that's what I needed to do. And that's what I wanted to get good at right out of the gate. So I studied the crap out of my camera. I made diagrams. I wrote down every button it had and what that button did, what all the little symbols mean. Like just, I went to school with it. Nice. And the shoot went really well. I felt very proud of it. In fact, some of those photos, those initial photos, I still look back on as some of my greater work, you know, wow. in the grand scheme of things. So, yeah, so the dance photography thing, that kind of just through time and patience and very nice people along the way helped kind of lift my sails a little bit. And then from there, I spent the next 3 months just at, like, so to speak, knocking on doors. I was asking every college dance program, every dance school in the area, if I could shoot their dress rehearsals, their classes, their performances. And again, thankfully, a lot of people said yes, and I got a lot of good practice in. The second shoot I did was at Smith College, and it was for their Dance MFA spring concert. And I ended up shooting a photo that I later submitted in a international dance photography competition and won fourth place. Nice. And that was like 3 months into just shooting at all. Wow. So I felt
4 months in?
Yeah.
And winning awards. Yeah. 4 months in, I was just starting to get to the point where I was not embarrassed to show my photos to anybody.
Well, I didn't have a lot of time. You know, I had 3 or 4 months from that shoot, that initial shoot, until I left for basic training and had to leave my camera at home. So, I feel like those 3 to 4 months of just solid, like, intensive dance work, dance photography work, really laid a good foundation for what would come later, you know, as I branched out and as I tried different things. But the Army, this is kind of sidebar, I ended up joining the Army at one point. And when I left for basic training, that kind of stopped my entire life for a good 8 months or so between basic training and my job school. So once I was done with that and moved back to California, then I picked the camera back up and started exploring.
That's awesome that you picked it up. Because, like, I would feel like, especially with being so new at it, doing 4 months worth of, like, shooting on it and then leaving for almost a year and coming back, it would be kind of like, and did I really miss it, or did I really, like, was it really something to do, you know, that I feel like I should, you know, get back into? I feel like if I didn't do something for 3 to 4 months, I feel like it would be, to me, in my mind, I'd be like, it wasn't worth it. But I mean, that's awesome that you still felt that passion to go back to it. I mean, which shows, I mean, obviously in your work, that you just obviously, like, you have a passion for your images that you create. So kudos to you for doing that. Good. So, and another thing that I wanted to kind of touch on a little bit is that when you told the dance studio that you had a dance camera body, were they kind of blown away by, like, oh my, like?
Not at all. They were not impressed in the slightest. They were a little hesitant because I was very transparent with them and told them I've never shot dance before, but I was willing to give it a try. And they, I mean, not being photographers, were just like, okay, cool, you've got gear, right on, bring it.
Yeah.
Let's just make it happen.
I would just think, like, maybe because, you know, people that weren't, I mean, especially now, I don't know, I guess as it was back then, but that if you were to tell somebody, like, I have a very niche specific camera, like, I wonder if that would, like, push some people, like, oh, you have a family camera? You have a football camera? Sell, yeah, let's do it. I want to pitch that to somebody. Like, I have a camera that is designed to take portraits. Only.
I think I had at least a little bit of modesty to be like, well, I have a camera, as opposed to I have a dance camera, which was what was happening in my mind. Yeah. But, you know,
no fault to your own, because you saw that in the dance magazine. So you assume automatically, like, this is a suitable camera for this image.
Exactly. I know better now. But then my poor, cute little simple mind was like, dance photography needs a dance camera, needs a dance lens. That's how the world works.
How awesome. And so you said that the 28 millimeter that you had is not suitable for dance. What would you say is probably the preferred lens to go with?
It really, at this point, with as much as I've shot, it really depends on what you're shooting, whether it's a live performance in a theater or a portrait session, like a dance portrait session outside or on location. So it's literally like anything else where, you know, depending on your proximity to your subject, the light you're getting, there's a lot of variables that would determine the ideal lens for that particular situation. I think in the beginning I was aiming to shoot a lot more live concerts, like live dance performances that were inside. And this is kind of the crazy thing is I started out shooting motion in low light, which
that's insane.
Is what I, from what I understand, is one of the harder things to photograph, and something that most photographers definitely don't start with. So I feel like I just, it was like baptism by fire. Like, this is what I want to shoot, so I'm just going to figure it out. So my point of reference when I'm shooting anything else these days, I think back to when I first started, like, okay, if I was in a dark room, my aperture would be this, my shutter speed would be minimum this, my ISO would be this, and then I adjust based on my situation. Now if I'm outside, like, it's going to be opposite of what I would do in a theater. Whereas most people, they think the other way around, right? They start shooting things outdoors, and so when they go to low light, they have to flip their brain that direction. Whereas for me, that's like my home base is low light.
That's incredible, because I shot a friend's show, and I was like, hey, I need some work for my portfolio. Can I, you know, shoot some images? I'm like, yeah, sure. And they actually were performing at the House of Blues when it was in downtown Disney. And so for the life of me, I couldn't figure it out, because I was opening up the shutter speed to a slower, I think it was like maybe like 1/30th of a second, to let in more light, obviously.
Right.
And I was getting this massive motion blur. Like, to some extent, it almost looked artistic, but I was like, why is everything so blurry? And so then literally during that show, hypothetically, let's say if I shot like 200 images, I probably had maybe 15 that were salvageable, that were, for some reason, the lighting in the house was okay. And then I was able to nail it. So yeah, like, kudos to you for starting off in that realm, because for me, I started, like most, started with daylight outside, and then gradually started to kind of ease my way indoors, which was, it was scary, to say the least.
Yeah, it is scary. I will give you that. And to your credit, though, when I shoot concerts now, sometimes I will drop that shutter way down to get some cool motion blur intentionally, to get some, you know, kind of abstract shots, something a little, you know, modern, postmodern. So it's not like you were doing anything wrong.
You're too kind, because they were bad. Like, there was one that maybe looked okay, decent. Like, it had like a slight, like, the guy was doing a headbang, so it was like a kind of movement, you know, and it looked kind of cool because everything, the rest of his body was in focus, but it was the head. I was like, okay, that's kind of cool, you know, like, that became like my signature, like, pose for a while. I was like, oh, look at this, like, this is so cool, right? But then in my mind, I was like, oh my gosh, like, how do I go back to do this again? And it's funny that you mentioned that so early on, that you were told about aperture, because that's a game changer, you know. I had my lens, I had a 15 to like 55, and I had a, what was it? I think it was a 70 to 300, I think. But they were variable apertures. So the tighter that you got in, the aperture would rise up. And so it would suck because, you know, I'd get in these tight shots, but then all of a sudden I was like, why is it getting darker? Like, what is the deal? I had no clue about aperture, like, you know, and had no clue that it was a variable lens, that it did that. And so when I had purchased my first lens that was a 1.8, I was blown away. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can see things in a dark room now. Not even dark room, like, just a normal lit room, and things come through a lot better. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, well, and I remember, you know, when I was doing my dance photography research, everything that I read straight up said, like, first and foremost, you want a quote unquote fast lens. And I didn't really understand what that meant, because fast in my mind meant shutter speed. Yeah. But what they were talking about was the actual aperture range, and how the lower the aperture number was, like a 1.8 to a 2.8, the quote unquote faster the lens would perform, so to speak. And so, fortunately, I had that point of reference to be like, okay, I need a lens that has at least 1.8 to 2.8 aperture. So when I went to Best Buy or when I went to the other camera store, I was able to deliver that information to say, I'm looking for something that has an aperture of at least this. Mm-hmm. And thankfully they understood, even though I had no idea what that meant, but I had some numbers and they gave me a lens with those numbers and that worked great. And so to go back to kind of what you were talking about the 28 millimeter not being as ideal for dance photography, the reason I say that is because when you're shooting like a live concert where there's a stage and an audience section, you know, maybe you're in a concert hall, whatever the case may be, the 28 millimeter prime, it's, you know, it's wider angle. You need to get closer to the dancers right. to be able to actually get what they're doing. You know, sitting in row G in the audience, you're going to get the whole stage, you know, potentially, yeah. whatever. And not a lot of detail with the dancers. And so that's kind of why I mentioned it wasn't as ideal for that type of situation. So whenever I was shooting these concerts, I had to get really close. And thankfully, it was during dress rehearsals where I could do that without disturbing anybody.
Nice.
But I remember shooting one ballet concert. This was my first paid job. They paid me $100. I still have a photocopy of the check because I was so excited about it. And it was like the Massachusetts Academy of Ballet. They were doing their spring concert. And my photographer friend, who they normally hire, couldn't make it. So he referred me. And I couldn't do the dress rehearsal. So I had to shoot the live performance with my super loud Canon 20D. And I was trying to be close, you know, relatively close, but I couldn't get up and move around the audience. So I had to just make it work where I was and try to not be, you know, distracting, even though my shutter was just loud as can be. It was challenging. I had to do a lot of cropping in post because I was so far away. And, you know, in those situations too, if there's a quiet moment or the music kind of dies down or silent, you can't shoot during those times. You ruin the show. So I had to be very careful with that too and picking and choosing when I would let my little loud clackety shutter go.
Wow.
But yeah, so that just brings me back to the question you were asking.
And so now let's skip ahead. How did you start to get into the Pilates realm and photographing, I mean, for Bazzi and like tons of other instructors? Like, what? How did you land that?
As I mentioned, I was already teaching Pilates before I started photography. And when I got back to California from Army training, I went back to working at the studio I had worked at before. And they needed photos for their website. And I raised my hand and said, well, I'd be happy to take those photos.
I have a Pilates camera.
Which ironically was the same camera I used for dance.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. And they trusted me and let me kind of have a go at it and schedule a photo shoot and coordinate the whole thing. So, you know, my first Pilates studio that I shot like marketing type photos for, content photos for, was one I was already working at. And then that business eventually changed hands to a new owner. They changed the name, everything, the machines. And then I did a second photo shoot for this new company in the same space with different equipment, but the same instructors. It was a very convenient transition for me, but very, very challenging for the actual owners, but that's neither here nor there. So got to do two Pilates photo shoots for companies I worked for. And then other friends that I knew that were instructors or owned their own studios, eventually they would start asking me to do their photos. And this was all when I lived up in the Bay Area, where I'm from originally. And I wound up moving to San Diego in 2016 to work for an obstacle course racing company. And I promise this is relevant to your question. I had done some photos of their event. It was a company called Epic Series, and they are a San Diego-based obstacle course race startup. And they did an event up in the Bay Area when I was living there. So I went and just shot some photos of their race, of the racers, and sent the photos to the company. And they were a really small team, again, a startup environment. And they were so excited about the photos that when they came back to the Bay Area, they asked if I would actually, if they could pay me to shoot the event. So I was like, well, I have an obstacle course racing camera. That works out great. So I shot the event. I was the only like photographer. And thankfully, I don't know if you're familiar with obstacle course racing, but things like Spartan races or Tough Mudders, they are like the courses are usually like the size of a 5K at least.
Wow.
This particular company was more like obstacle course racing for CrossFitters. Mm-hmm. So small course, not a lot of running at all. It was, you know, I think they set up on the soccer fields at at San Jose State or something. Yeah. So it wasn't too challenging to kind of traverse back and forth and get participant photos that way. It was a long day for sure. But anyway, finished the photos for the event. And not long after that, they lost their marketing person. So since I was buddies with the company, I offered to kind of do some marketing for them, like social media marketing stuff on, you know, just remotely, you know, just as a part-time thing.
And do you have any marketing background prior to this?
Not formally. I think I was like running the social media pages for the Pilates studios I was working for. I was helping them with their websites and kind of helping with the copywriting and the content and, you know, anything I did for my own photography endeavors. But that's kind of the extent of it.
Got it. You know, okay.
Yeah, it was minimal. So they were like, hey, we need a social media person. And I was like, I'll do it. You know, again, just raised my hand and took it on. And within a few months, that company ended up getting bought out by this millionaire guy who wanted a full-time marketing person that was local to San Diego. So I decided to make a huge career shift and move to San Diego to be their full-time marketing person, not knowing very much about marketing and not having ever lived in Southern California before. And did that for about 2 years and, you know, also photographed the races while doing the, you know, race day coordination and event management. So wearing a lot of hats for those events, but it was really fun. After about 2 to 3 years of being there, I felt like my time had kind of run its course and I was ready to move on to something else. So I started looking around and in Orange County, there was an opening in the administration office for Bazzi Pilates headquarters in Newport Beach. And even though I did my Pilates training with a different company, a company called Balance Body, I knew about Bazzi Pilates. I respected their company. I respected their founder, Raleigh Zakowicz. He's written a ton of books about Pilates. He's done DVDs. He's kind of like a celebrity in the Pilates world. So to be potentially on his administration team was like a dream come true. So I applied, and fortunately, I knew their operations manager, Stella. She was one of my master trainers back in the day when I trained with a third company called IMX Pilates. She was a master trainer for them back in 2007, 2008. And so I remembered her name because, you know, I spent a whole weekend with her and she was so impressive. And so I applied for the job, interviewed with Stella and Rail my first day walking in, you know, for the interview, and it's with the man himself. And the job itself was for like host administrator. So coordinating all the teacher training programs all over the world with Pilates studios, with our host studios. And I offered at the time, you know, hey, I do photography. Like, is if there's any need you have for photos, like I'm your girl. Like if you want me to shoot mat classes or headshots or whatever the case may be. And Rail was, he saw some of my work. He really loved it. And offered to give me a go at that. So that was kind of, I was brought in as, you know, the host administrator, but also kind of the unofficial in-house photographer. So whenever he taught a mat class, I would go to the studio and photograph it, get the participants, and we would use those as our marketing photos and content. And I did that for about 2 years, just again photographing his weekend courses, mat classes, events at the studio, all kinds of things. So if even if you go to the website now, a lot of those images are my images. They're using a lot of them still for flyers for teacher training programs, and it's really incredible.
That's huge. And for a lot of listeners, they probably don't understand like the gravity of that, because obviously it's not that realm. But I guess, like, how would you put it in context? Like, Bazzi is equivalent to, like, I don't want to say Nike, because Nike is more of a like brand for like athletic apparel. But I mean, like, it would be like equivalent to going to like some sort of like off training camp, you know, that's, you know,
it'd be
sponsored
like,
by an yeah. athlete or something like that, I think.
It'd be like if Bear Grylls did like a, you know, did like a, I don't know, this first thing that popped into my head. Like if Bear Grylls from the, what was that show that he had about surviving in the wild?
I want to say it was Survivor, but that's a movie.
Maybe this is not a good one.
Survivor the Wild. Surviving the Wild, was it?
Man versus Wild.
I think there you go.
Yeah,
you go.
Man yes. versus Wild with Bear Grylls. That'd be like if Bear Grylls, like, had a company that was all about teaching you how to survive the wild.
Yeah, you want it from the best, basically. Someone
right.
who has, you know, some, because I mean, he had like, what training? Like military training of some sort?
It was like, yeah, something.
I forget which one. But yeah, basically he had this like very, I guess, prestigious background. So that it wasn't like they just chose some like Joe Schmo to go out there to be a survivor. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly, I would say, probably that is what you landed into. And I think, I don't want to say I think, but it's your like all in, like jump right in mentality. Like I like envy that. I feel like I tiptoe into things, like test the water a little bit and then like wait and like, oh no, that's not quite yet. Right. Yeah. Oh no. Like, so, or did I bring in floaties? Oh, I don't know. Maybe I should inflate it a little more. So by you doing that, that's like really inspirational to me. Because yeah, I will talk myself out of things 9 times out of 10 before I actually like execute them. So kudos.
What's up, everybody? I'm breaking up this podcast real quick to say I need your help to keep this podcast going. If you're digging this episode, make sure to rate it 5 stars, give it an applause, or give it a like. If you think this podcast is weak, give me a rating nonetheless. Lastly, write a short or long review and share this episode with someone you think that would benefit from this, or share it with an enemy to waste their time. All right, back to this episode.
Back to Behind the Viewfinder Podcast.
Thank you.
I want to ask you a question. Did you ever shoot for Prana Pilates?
I never did.
Wow, okay.
Wait, the Pilates studio?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I was thinking Prana, the yoga apparel company. Okay. Prana Pilates, yes and no. The owner of Prana Pilates is Karen Ellis. She owns Pilates Nerd, which is a very well-known Pilates-themed apparel company. Yeah. I did a product shoot for her, for Pilates Nerd, but it was at her studio, yes, Prana Pilates. Okay. So while I was there, I did a couple shots of the studio space and just some things that she could put on her website, you know, content. I think that's what I love to shoot mostly, is content for companies and brands and businesses.
How crazy, because I think like, not necessarily like our paths have crossed, but we were like kind of like hovering in the same area. Because at some point I had shot a video content basically for her, kind of like a 1 minute, like, this is what the studio is, this is what we have to offer, yada, yada, yada. And which I got everything executed really well, but she was so like bent, like she didn't like her voice, because we're using her voice to like basically tell her story about the studio. And so I'm like, oh, man. So I almost want to like take the audio from that and like strip it and then just like post it so that I can have it. But, you know, I mean, it's no longer there, but still, I thought it was a pretty cool video. But
I mean,
how crazy.
I'm sure you can still use it for your portfolio, for sure.
Yeah. I just feel like if, I don't know, like if she wasn't happy with that, like with her voice, like, you know, I don't know.
Shoot her a message. Ask her about it. Be like, hey, can I just post this with no audio?
So definitely might strip the voiceover part of it, but we'll see.
Well, so speaking of overlap, and I apologize if this is going on a tandem, but, or a tangent rather. One of my coworkers at Bazzi Pilates, Marta Frigiotto, she had asked me to shoot photos for her Pilates business after she left Bazzi. And I didn't get back to her immediately. I'm not good at getting back to people right away. That's something I'm working on for sure. But in the meantime, she was on a tight deadline and a friend recommended you for the job. And I didn't know who, she just mentioned to me, I'm on a tight deadline. I found someone else to do it. And I'm like, okay, great. You know, good luck. If you need photos in the future, whatever. And I think it was when I was on some kind of like hashtag spree, like liking all these Pilates hashtags or something. And I saw Connect Pilates and I saw you were the photographer there. And then I saw Marta's pictures and you were the photographer. I was like, oh, that's the guy that did this and it, Marta and oh, and then I just started seeing your name all over the place. So it's just such a funny small world.
It's crazy in that sense, because I know, you know, like for others, like I've seen it firsthand where their world gets smaller. And I would say definitely now for me, it's starting to get to that point where I know like certain, I won't say residences, but like zip codes, I guess, per se, that like, oh yeah, there's a chance that I might run into so-and-so, whatever, you know, and it's just so crazy to see that. And especially now, it's like, if I ever see your stuff, it's like, chances are like, oh, okay, like this person is known by this person, like, wow, like almost like, you know, to the second or third degree, like, know this person.
Yeah.
It's so crazy, but how weird. Mardo actually was, you know, she was like hard-pressed for that deadline too. I was like, wow, like, I think she wanted like a turnaround of like 2 weeks. And we had shot like over 100 photos.
They looked great, by the way.
Thanks. she was like super, I mean, which was cool because she was super hands-on. Like we'd shoot it and then she would review it. And then she's like, no, like, I need to have my leg straighter or whatever. And I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. So luckily on the fly, I was deleting as I go so that when I came into post, everything I had was just edit everything. So I didn't have to like sift through all the stuff that wasn't suitable.
Way better.
Yeah. Yeah. And which I kind of go back and forth between sometimes, because sometimes I would like to delete as I go, but then sometimes I don't delete and I come back. This actually looks better on a full screen versus a camera screen. So I don't know. I'm wishy-washy when it comes to, I guess selection process. As the day goes on in the shoot.
That's fair.
Yeah. So for someone that is like relatively getting into that, they want to get into dance photography, they're fairly new, let's say a couple months in, or maybe there's something that they've connected, maybe that they have a dance background as well, and they think, you know, actually I think I would be better suited doing photography. What would be your words of wisdom to that person?
Oh, man.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. When I first started out, I kept this little like journal of tips for myself to remember. Nice. Like just little things like make sure your camera's adjusted to this, or just kind of words of wisdom to myself. And one of them was not the nicest. And it was, if a dancer's technique is bad, it's going to be very difficult to get good photos. Like, and I mean that with as much love as I can have for everybody, of all the dancers. But if the technique isn't there, it's going to be hard to get good lines. It's going to be hard to get good technique that shows in the photo. And as a photographer, if you don't dance, or as a new dancer who's still learning technique, like, might go completely unnoticed and people might see different things, and that's great. But if you, go to submit that into a dance photography competition or to Dance Magazine, like it may not go over that well. And I've run into the same thing shooting skateboarding where I don't know what I'm looking at half the time. I don't know exactly where the apex of the trick is. I don't know what the cool moment is to get. And I'm always experimenting with that. And what looks really cool to me, to the skater, might be like, oh, you were a little too early, or oh, you were a little too late, or oh, this angle's not good. Try shooting it from over here. Yeah. So there's definitely a learning curve when it comes to that stuff. And so my advice, I think, is to look at and really study as much dance photography that's out there already as you can. So you start to get an idea of the types of positions and poses and styles and genres that are out there, just to, get your feet wet in the visuals of the dance world. Because what you see on stage, not all of those steps are going to translate well into a photograph, unless you're just insanely good. And I'm thinking things like tour jetés, which is like a spinning jump leap thing, right? You might as well just get the jeté part of it. I think that's if I were, if I were me starting out, I feel like that's what I was doing already by cutting out all these pictures from Dance Magazine. And I can still remember exactly what some of them look like on my wall from when I was in high school, 15 something years ago. That's my 2 cents on the spot.
Which is huge, because I mean, we talked about this briefly. It's like, for me, I don't have that background. So you mentioned too, is like with your skate one, is like relativity is like through the eye of the beholder, right? Because for me, and probably for most of my like viewers, they'd be more as the overall, like
right,
the whole image in itself, composition. But for someone that maybe is specific into that niche, it's like, no, their lines, it's not bad, or when it's not great, their foot is sickle or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And those tiny things can make or break, like you said, like an image, especially if you're trying to push into, get published into like a dance magazine. So I think those things are specific. I think that's also what I like band pictures, because you can't get a whole lot of bad photos. You can get power stances, you can get them just rocking out, you can get them spitting in the crowd, you can get them cheersing with beer, and they just look epic no matter what, right? I mean, like, there's no bad photos.
Right.
But yeah, that's definitely a good one. Awesome stuff. So what I like to do is also have you plug in, however people, if they want to come follow you, come see your stuff, any social media platforms that they can come see you at.
Yeah, so my website, first and foremost, is Motionscape Photography.
Can I stop you right there?
Yeah.
That's also another thing too, I want to say. I think your brand name is like phenomenally brilliant.
Thank you.
Like landscape, Motionscape. Like, did I get that?
Yeah,
guess
exactly,
that right?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, like that's just brilliant.
I want to give a little backstory about that, just a tiny bit. Thank you. Because there are some days where I feel a little hesitant about it, but I've committed to it. So it is. When I came up with that name, in my same little journal, I wrote down all my initial notes on. I had like 2 pages of just jotted words down. I think crash light was another one I liked. Things that just had to do with movement and dance and photography and light, whatever. And just, there were like over 50 different names. And I kept coming back to Motionscape because in college, when I was doing a lot of modern dance, we always talked about soundscapes as like the music for this particular piece or whatever. It was all very postmodern. And so you may not have an actual song that you're dancing to. You may have a soundscape. And I thought that word was so cool. And so when I was first interested in shooting dance, I didn't necessarily want to just shoot all the pretty stuff. I wanted to shoot the body in really different, interesting poses and positions. like something that was just tangled up and, you know, kind of weird and just like not something you see every day. And I feel like modern dance very much encompasses a lot of that, where you're just exploring all the different ways the body can move. And sometimes the goal, if there is a goal in modern dance, is to find ways you've never moved before or something that's new and different. And so thinking about the all the different ways the body can move just kind of brought me back to, you know, the motionscape thing, just the spectrum of different ways the body can be. And in my mind, the weirder, the better. But anyway, thank you. So that's where that name comes from.
Awesome. Because it not only does it fit the realm of like dance, but it fits anything related to the body that's in movement. Like it's, you know, it's like, that's just, I don't know. I was like, wow, like mine's just so, like, but no, it's cool. Keep going.
Thank you. So motionscapephotography is .com is my website. And then on Instagram, it's motionscape_photography. And then I'm on Facebook as Motionscape Photography as well. I think it's just facebook.com/motionscape. And those are my places.
Cool beans. All right. Thanks again for taking the time to chat about your story. Loved it. I know everyone on that list is going to love it too. So thank you very much. And we'll do it again sometime soon. Talk about other stuff. We can talk about bad dancers. I'm totally kidding.
Oh. Well, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure too. All right, you guys, that's it for me. You know what happens next. I'll catch you on the flip side.
Thanks for listening and happy clicking.